This month, on A Conversation with Gangaji, we're taking a look at the subject of vulnerability. And for the sake of simplicity, we've broken it down into two kinds. There's the voluntary kind, where we choose to expose ourselves by telling the truth about some aspect of ourselves that feels, well, vulnerable. Then there's the involuntary kind, when something happens, we're caught off guard, and we're left to choose either to protect ourselves or to open to all the emotions we work so hard to avoid. Feelings like shame, hurt, jealousy, unworthiness, and just full-on pain. When it comes to our relationships with other people, it may seem easier sometimes to go into protection mode rather than telling the truth about how we really feel.
I'm jealous. I hurt. I'm fearful. I love. Now what am I going to do? Withdraw? Hate? Close off? Or just hurt and love? I recommend hurting and loving.
One of the many great things about vulnerability is that it makes it possible for all of us to dare to be human, to discover the experience of being truly intimate, and to open to the reality that no matter how we appear on the outside, all of us could use a little help sometimes. And it starts with a willingness to just be. I'm Hillary Larson, and this is A Conversation with Gangaji. I wanted to start our conversation today just by talking about the last show. And the last show, Alanis Morissette sat in for me, and that was such a pleasure for me to be sitting off in the other room, honestly, and monitoring the recording, but listening to your exchange with her. And also from my end as a producer, I just really wanted to acknowledge the people behind the scenes on her end that helped us make that possible. And they were just so gracious, and and I felt like they really reflected her.
Yes.
So anyway, there's a lot that happens sometimes to make this show happen. And I just really like to acknowledge the people that you don't hear, you know, that it's not just you and me. And then as I move into this subject for this month, it's a subject of vulnerability. What I've done here, as I looked at it, because it's such a huge subject, I was looking at it as two separate categories, really. And one was this voluntary vulnerability and then involuntary vulnerability. And, you know, the subject of vulnerability is so popular now, and I think in the greatest way. But what I've seen in myself is that I do have this capacity to be vulnerable. In fact, when we receive letters, if it's directed towards me at all, it's always like, thank you for being so vulnerable. And there are certainly ways that I protect myself. But that for me started, you know, over 28 years ago when I was fighting some very horrible addictions. And part of that was my recovery was the need to save my own life, was to be vulnerable and to stand up and say, I have these battles within myself and I need help. And so, and within that, I found just extraordinary connections with human beings that were willing to stand up and say the same thing. So this voluntary vulnerability is, it's beautiful and it's huge, and but it's not the whole picture, I think.
Well, it's so beautiful, I mean, when you speak of that, because you do have this great capacity to be vulnerable, and that's what makes this radio program alive for people. And it, to me, when we say vulnerability, we have to realize the other words, other aspects of that, which is an exposure and undefended, unprotected. And naturally, we spend our years learning how to be protected, how to be covered, because that's the way we survive. And then we get to modern culture where people are surviving in their bubbles of defense. And while it may appear to be even community action, social interaction, it's going by a formula. And when you're really vulnerable, voluntarily vulnerable, there's no formula. You are stripped in a way. You're really naked in that moment. And you're intelligent enough to realize that you're naked and not pretend that you aren't, and in that to ask for help. So this getting to help, it's so big, because we are conditioned, and we genetically and culturally and socially and spiritually, to do it on our own. And when we realize we failed on our own, And we want to live. We want another chance. We want to be. Then we can pray or ask for help. And you did. So I really want to acknowledge you. You did that, and that's huge. You actually have to already have come back from some kind of depth of suffering to even recognize that, to not just be in denial of that or just going for the next high to be able to cover that. So it is what makes this show alive.
There was something that somebody said, actually, there was a couple comments here I just wanted to toss out here, was that somebody said that I think vulnerability is the root of all addictive impulses. And I think when I look at that, I mean, I look at the addiction of appearing to be perfect, like I've got my act together, and then in vulnerability, we have to give that all up, and then it goes deeper from there.
So the addiction is really the defense of vulnerability, not the vulnerability. The vulnerability is the willingness to experience, to have the pain, to have the sense of worthlessness, a sense of meaninglessness of one's life, and to burn in that and to pray or ask for help. But when we defend against that, our help comes in addictive ways, and it's no help at all, of course. It's a cover. It's deeper protection. So in that sense, it's the opposite of vulnerability, defended.
Yeah, I was looking at, well, what is so hard or seemingly so hard about vulnerability? And I was thinking that it's so closely linked to the feeling of shame. Mm-hmm. Like I failed, I got it wrong, I'm imperfect, there's something, I don't know, embarrassing about me or something. And it seems like you speak of, vulnerability itself is beautiful. But I was thinking, well, maybe it's the story attached to vulnerability that creates the feeling of shame.
Exactly. Because, and it's, shame is horrible, of course. It's a terrible feeling, but there's something under shame. It's fear of death, finally. A fear of loss, which is fear of death. And we don't think of it as death because we're so caught up often in the emotionality of the shame and the worthlessness, the meaninglessness. But if we're willing to open to that, to actually experience it, we're not vulnerable in that moment. We're just suffering. And we're telling the truth about the suffering. The vulnerability is really under that when we actually open to it all. And it is beautiful. It's the resistance to the vulnerability where there's either, when it's working, a denial or dissociation or a story about power and not needing vulnerability, not needing anything. When that stops working and when the defenses crumble, we get afraid, and there's stories that are generated, and that's suffering, and it's not pretty, it's not beautiful. But under that is the true beauty of the reality. As human beings, as creatures, we are vulnerable every moment. And as emotional beings, we are vulnerable to being not liked or hated or betrayed or left, abandoned. So physically, emotionally, mentally, we are vulnerable because we can't know it all. We can't understand it all. And we can be stupid at times. So it's the identity with the physical or the mental or the emotional experience as a life form that then creates the desire to escape that vulnerability, and the willingness to realize the escape from that is suffering itself in some form, even if it's a form of great success. If you just go deeply into, or just prick the surface of someone who is powerful and great success, there's a maintenance to that that is relentless, and it is so focused on maintaining the success, the defenses in that sense, or in the sense we're speaking of today, that there's the inner life is empty and it's not available. It's not being lived.
That kind of that constant maintenance, that reminds me of this story I wanted to share with you. This was, I don't know how many years ago it was, let's say 7 or 8 years ago. And I had read Diamond in Your Pocket, and I that was my first exposure to you. It was such a huge revelation. It was like I felt like I had read the truth for the first time in my whole life, that I had been waiting for that. And then not long after it, I don't want to say this was like an absolute direct connection, but it hit me so deeply, just this willingness to, just to be. And I was on a trip with my partner, and we were at the Portland airport on a Monday morning, and it was jammed. It was totally jammed. And he and I were at the ticket counter, and while I was talking to the lady at the ticket counter, he had moved our bags, and I didn't see that he'd moved our bags. And I stepped back and I completely splatted on my back. Oh. I was laying on top of this golf bag. And it wasn't just that there were some people in line. It was like, it just felt like a stadium full of people. And there was this moment, and it seems like, oh, well, that's, why would I remember that story after all these years? But it impacted me so greatly, because there was this moment where I just was like, I just wanted to like protect myself from that kind of humiliation. Mm. And I remember this decision I made just to like just lay here and experience this shame and humiliation as much as you possibly can in this moment. And I have to say, I don't know how many people can relate to that, but I had such freedom the rest of the trip, because honestly, that could have been a game changer for me. So, and it was, I felt like it was, when I look back on it, it wasn't like, oh, I fell on top of a golf bag in front of hundreds of people and I thought about Gangaji and she says to what, it was just so ingrained after I read that book that it just happened. Mm.
So it's such a great example. And as you were speaking of it, I realized that, of course, that's what slapstick comedy is. And for a comedian to really be a good comedian, it has to be total vulnerability. And this willingness, this exposing our very human clumsiness or ignorance of what's behind us, and then just falling into that, and that's freedom. And of course, the laughter that we experience when someone shows us that is, it comes from this recognition, and recognition of how if we defend against that, it's not funny. We meet that, we open, it's free, and then it's even becomes a great joke, a great laugh.
Yeah, it is. It's hilarious, because to me, I mean, on a teaching level, what it represents to me, for all of us, because we all have our variations of this, is that I grew up thinking to myself, in order for me to survive well, I need to be together and I need to be stoic. Mm. And when I was laying on top of the golf bag in front of all those people, I'd kind of lost my chance at that.
Well, that's, I think, really the essence of what stoicism is. If you go all the way back, it's not this dead dissociation. It's just really this willingness to recognize it's all happening and it's out of our control. And then we are in that moment are not attached to not having fallen into the golf bag. You fell into the golf bag. End of conversation. Beginning of investigation.
Yeah, it's funny how those moments can be seemingly so small, but then in the scope of a lifetime, such a like a huge shift in what's possible.
Yes, it was, in that sense, a test, not in the way we think of tests as bad things, but naturally life is always affording us the opportunity to surrender, and that's the test. So it's a great story.
I want to make sure I get a listener question in here, and this is more on along the lines of the voluntary vulnerability category. This person says, "Dear Gangaji, sometimes I wonder where the edge is between vulnerability and oversharing. When vulnerability is taken too far, it seems as though it can become a new version of protection. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that."
Oh, I think that's a great question. I know that, you know, I'm not one for giving formulas for how you discover these things, but it is a living discovery when you're like using some sense of vulnerability. It's not open and free. It actually has it's sticky. There's some sentimentality often and narcissism, probably, speaking about me and let me tell you what I did, and being open as a dramatic representation of vulnerability rather than the simple openness. Like when you fell on the golf clubs, you rested there for a moment.
I did.
Yeah. That's, to me, vulnerability. It's a rest. And sometimes getting to rest is the challenge, of course, because of worthlessness, everything you've said. But in the moment of rest, there's nothing happening, and it's so sweet.
Speaking of a moment of rest, when I was kind of making out my notes for this show over the last few weeks, I was listening to you talk about something. I think it was on your With Gangaji broadcast that happens every month. I always, like, I seem like I always toss that in there because I actually love that program of yours so much. And you were talking about a radio interview you had done and that you suggested to the person who was doing the interview that maybe you spend 60 seconds in silence. Mm. And the thought of that to them was, you know, we don't do that in radio.
It's death.
And it is, because I was thinking, it actually, when you were talking, I actually felt myself getting uptight because I'm a radio person. And one of the very, very first things I learned in radio is to not leave any gaps. And and in radio, it's called dead air.
Mm, yes.
And it's like, please, please, anything but dead air.
Yeah.
And when you and I had our conversation, embracing the unthinkable, and you completely spun me around at the end, which was a great example of involuntary vulnerability. Part of that was like, oh, I'm not doing my job because now we have some dead air here.
And well, this is the way most people live their lives, as if they're on radio and they can't have a moment of silence. And that's how we are driven. And then we're exhausted, but we keep hoping if we reach some end, we can then rest rather than just taking this moment on radio, in your life, however it's showing up, and be vulnerable, be open, be free.
I love that, how you compare dead air in radio to how we don't allow that in our lives, these moments, these gaps.
It's fear of death again, of course. It always shows up. That's our human or animal or just form-driven imperative, do not die. And that shows up in so many ways. It's not just on your deathbed or by a disaster, but in the many ways in a day that we lose something or we fear losing something. That's always fear of death. We fear of there being just space. And to realize just space, it's full.
There's actually a comment from somebody else who said dying is profoundly vulnerable. And I think that making friends with our vulnerability makes it more possible for a good death.
It's, I would say dying is probably, in one sense, the ultimate involuntary vulnerability. We don't want to die. Even most of us who are listening anyway really don't want to die. But we will die, whether we like it or not. So it's not a voluntary event. But the possibility of recognizing that there are these involuntary events and volunteering for this inevitable, then you're not waiting for the moment of your physical death to actually experience the spaciousness of falling, not keeping yourself upright, of opening, of open space. And then that, you meet death, as we will all have to meet death. And some of us will experience great grace in that moment of meeting death, and some won't. Some will still be fighting to get upright, as animals do. To get upright means you're not dead yet. But in the surrender, everyone is gifted by this possibility to open to life as we are present in this brief span.
When I look at people, maybe through the aging process, and if there's maybe it's not even just the aging process, if there's a fight against vulnerability, it does seem like it makes the aging process harder, because there's a loss in it too, because there's a loss of connection that could have been had.
Well, aging is hard enough. You know, we don't need to make it harder. There are enough involuntary, vulnerable moments and periods that we, you know, it's not to say you shouldn't keep yourself in shape or take care of things that can be medicated or fixed, but just to recognize that the vulnerability of being an animal that is born and then dies. And that's the... we can recognize that, as Ramana did, when we're 16 and we have a full life ahead of us. So it's not necessarily the chronological aging. It's simply the fact of aging and opening to that. You know, usually that doesn't occur to people until you reach your 30s, probably 40s, 50s, 60s, and on. But it's possible, whatever your biological age, to open to it now. I mean, the Buddha did. He recognized age and disease, and that waked him up to something that he could not discover in his protected, defended life. He had to choose vulnerability to walk the earth like other beings.
I love the idea of, like, the vulnerability really starts with just being in a body, you know, because we don't get to choose our bodies. And some of us have had struggles with our bodies, either the way they operate or the way they look or society's, you know, perception of how they should be. And those can be extraordinary moments of opening to the self-hatred that can be within that.
That's right.
And it also seems to me within that, now that I'm sitting here just saying it to you, is that sometimes people could see vulnerability as some form of self-abuse or negativity of saying, oh, I have self-hatred about a certain aspect of myself. But to me, true vulnerability leaves open this possibility of self-love.
Well, yes, because the inquiry doesn't stop with self-hatred. That's actually where it begins. It's the willingness to tell the truth. That doesn't mean you have to broadcast the truth to people about your process or where you are in your investigation, because it can all happen within a moment of seconds, minutes at most, in the willingness just to take this moment and tell the truth about where you are protected, where you are defended, and not to get into an analysis of that or the whys and the whens it happened or what you will be like when you're unprotected, just to open to what is being defended. And generally it's some sense of something missing or not right or even actually wrong. And to open to that, there is a discovery of what's closer than any of it.
We just have about 3 or 4 minutes left, and I'm hesitant to take this opportunity to say what I'm about to say, but as we've been doing these shows over, I think this is show number 28. And at a certain point, after a few months, I kind of became suspicious of myself because there was a way that the conversation itself felt like a protection or a postponement in some way, and that playing clips, I love the clips. I love for people to hear you in all these different ways. And I love for people to hear these exchanges you have with people and these moments of vulnerability with where you have them stop. And there was some way I was thinking, gosh, I hope she never does that with me. Because it's vulnerable for me to have these conversations with you, because that silence, that dead air, to me is a tender area.
Yes. And yes, it is a tender, tender, sweet area. It's here. Just try.
That's right. Thank you. This actually would be a perfect place to end our conversation this month, but I wanted to take a few minutes now to play one of my favorite exchanges with Gangaji, and it has everything to do with the subject of vulnerability. I used a portion of this piece in an episode a couple of years ago. It was about love and intimacy, but I've been actually looking for an excuse to play the whole thing, so here it is. The issue you're about to hear Gangaji walk this lovely woman through is this: how do I unprotect myself? But first, Gangaji's question back to her is, how do you actually go about protecting yourself in the first place? What are the steps in shutting down? Seeing the mechanics of this is so helpful. Let's listen to this.
So I'm asking you to teach me how it is you withdraw. Say, I want to learn how to withdraw. What are the steps? Yes, you see. So now you have to examine. Okay, it seems so natural to me. It just happens. But it doesn't just happen because you've seen the lead up to it.
Yeah. I can just say to myself, I'm going to go blank here.
I'm going to go blank here.
And I'm going to withdraw and move back.
And I'm going to withdraw and move back. And then what has to happen? What do I do internally?
So I want to run away.
And then I want to run away. Yeah, internally. So I get all that. That's good. That makes sense. I can do that now.
Okay, good, good. And then you get lots of adrenaline.
Lots of adrenaline? Where does that come from? How do you generate that?
I'm not sure.
Well, let's see. You're teaching me.
Okay. You get really angry.
Uh-huh. Angry at somebody who's causing me to run away.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now I've got this story about me and inadequacy based on some comparison and some feelings of jealousy and worthlessness. But now I have to involve somebody else who caused this story.
Yeah, because they deserted me.
They deserted me. Now the story, I can start to feel it right through there. They deserted me.
They did.
And then?
This is not so hard after all, guys. Oh, dear. Right, now where we were at.
So we are unwinding the story that was wound so tightly that you didn't even know it was there. It just seemed like something that just happened. We're unwinding it, and we have gotten to the point of where I'm victimized in two ways, by this feeling of jealousy that arises in me and this person that causes that feeling. So I've got to escape.
Mm-hmm.
Now what I want to know is, how do I make the next step to escape? What happens physiologically? What happens in my body? What happens in my emotions? How do I go blank? How do I withdraw? How do I hide?
Stop talking.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
Clench my teeth.
Clench your teeth? Okay.
Yeah.
What happens to the eyes?
Blank stone.
Mm-hmm. Stone eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cold.
Very cold. And my body itself, is there a posture that goes with it?
I'm not quite sure.
Well, put yourself in the situation.
And yeah, slumped. I guess victim, got to be victim. So it's really slumped, round-shouldered. Yeah,
well, I'm telling you, this takes some effort.
Yeah. And it does.
It does.
Because I'm very tired. I'm sick of fighting this depression. And it's
effort is a lot of energy, you know.
There is a lot of energy that goes into it.
So then what's the solution? What, you see all the steps. I'm sure there are many more other steps, but those are at least enough to see. At any point along the way, you have seen it now, at any point along the way, you can say, stop. I'm giving up this power to close down. So you sit up straight. You open your eyes. You say, hello, you have hurt me, or I'm feeling hurt and I'm blaming you. Mm-hmm. Or just, I'm feeling hurt, I hurt.
Yeah.
Or, I love you.
Thank you.
You see how easy? Isn't this easier?
It is.
It is. This is the truth that we hate to tell. Because it is. We have so much invested in these powers that we have developed. And we think they're so great and special. And to give them up means I will actually be unprotected. I will actually have to experience this pain. But you see that in protecting yourself, you still experience the pain. Mm-hmm. So what a bad joke you have played on yourself. If this protection actually worked, it would be another matter. But the protection augments the pain, turns the pain into suffering. Pain is pain, and yes, so let's say there's jealous pain, and we can diagnose jealousy and why it shouldn't be or why it should be, but say it's there, just as part of the human experience. Jealousy. Feel it. I'm jealous. I hurt. I'm fearful. I love. Now what am I going to do? Withdraw? Hate? Close off? Or just hurt and love? I recommend hurting and loving.
That clip is from the compilation CD, Open, Unprotected, and Free. You can find that by going to the website, gongaji.org. And if you'd like to support this show, you can do so by going to iTunes and giving A Conversation with Gongaji a rating or leaving a comment. It helps more people find the show. And if you're interested in becoming a sponsor, please go to the radio page on the website. You can email us to find out how all that works. Well, that's it for us. Thank you again for joining us. This has been A Conversation with Gongaji.